Women are supposed to be the ones who are good at keeping secrets. But any woman who knows that at all will tell you she's never seen into a man's heart. The soil of a man's heart, Lewis, is stonier. Like the soil up there in the old Micmac burying ground.
Get the baby!
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 133. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. 133. For a beautiful weekend, which I will not designate with a timestamp. My name is Scott Johnson, and this is the show that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Joining me tonight, we have Brian, sometimes dead is better Dunaway.
Ah, yes. It's okay, honey. You know how men are. He's probably just out getting a burger or a chicken dinner, or maybe he's digging up your child's cold, dead body and taking it up to the Micmac burial ground to resurrect him. What? Too soon? Micmac, paddywhack, fairy dog's bones, this old demon came rolling home.
Oh my gosh, dude. I am so glad you brought up what men do on weekends. We're going to talk about that later.
That was the most offensive thing I've ever heard in any movie we've seen ever.
We'll get to that in a moment. Also with us, Randy, the ground is sour, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. So, in preparation for this week's episode of Film Sack, I took the liberty of temporarily moving into an old house on a two-lane highway in rural Maine. I immediately saw some issues with the property. The whole region is crawling with zombie creatures who happen to die in this glen out in the woods nearby. Also, the highway is a death trap for pedestrians. So, I did what anyone who has ever lived on this planet would do. I built a fence. Problem solved. What movie are we watching next week?
Oh, how simple. What simple solution you've got there.
Every problem in the film. You get, like, wouldn't you have, if you were buying this property and you had little kids, wouldn't you have built the fence before you even moved in?
I know.
Right. And what day did they go to see the house when the trucks weren't zipping by? Because every day they were there. There were trucks zipping by 24/7.
Well, Mr. Munster warned him. Also joining us. Oh, wait. In your eyes, wait, what? What's this? Why am I hearing Peter Gabriel? Oh, I know why. Because Brian Ibbett chose. I don't want to get in too much trouble.
What a jerk.
He went to a Peter Gabriel concert tonight. Forgot when it was. Had tickets. Had to go. It is our first Film Sack without Mr. Ibbett. I know. Weird. But he had to do it. So
we don't blame him at all. We give him a hard time, but if I had a Peter Gabriel tickets, I would still not be here.
Yeah, of course you'd go. Why wouldn't you go? You would go and you'd hear him talk smack about Genesis when it was what's his name in there?
Right.
Who's the other guy?
Peter Frampton.
No, the other guy that sang the freaking Tarzan songs for Disney.
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins. He'd probably talk smack about Phil Collins a little bit. You know? Gives a little shit to the old British.
You can't give Phil Collins shit right now. He's had a hard couple of years.
Has he?
Yeah, he tried to kill himself.
What?
Was going to. You remember all that?
No.
Got his second, third, fourth divorce, whatever. Got really depressed.
I have not heard any of this.
True story.
Wow. Well, Brian, but thanks for your loss tonight. Being our gain. So no Ibbett tonight, but show nonetheless. We're talking about Pet Sematary. As it so happens, this is the 80s, 89, by the way, which I totally had that wrong in my head about when this came out. But anyway, came out in 89, based on a Stephen King novel, and Scott Fletcher tries to explain.
Pet Sematary Lewis Creed moves his family to the country and discovers a cursed burial ground on his property that brings the dead back to life, yet with an added streak of evil. An accident soon forces the heartbroken father to contemplate the unthinkable.
The unthinkable.
Yeah, getting the cat's nuts cut. That was unthinkable.
Was it really on his property? Can we just address that for a second? It wasn't, right?
No, and I just want to start right here saying you can't. It's really, really hard to talk about this movie without also talking about the book.
Yeah. Which is scary as hell.
The movie follows the book pretty closely. Yeah. And so anytime there's like a question like, what am I seeing? Is this really – is it on his property? Is it across the highway on the same side? How far away? If it's not explicitly explained in the movie, I kind of go to the book. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it was depicted in the movie, which is a very short hike.
A ways away from his house. Right.
Right.
Impressive as hell, though. The main one, like the big one, the big Indian one. Jeez.
Oh, scary. So sci-fi, excellent stuff.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. Beautiful. I guess they went through a lot of trouble to get like bulldozers up on a ridge and like build that. So that was all cool. No smoke and mirrors in that case. It was not an actual burial ground, but a reproduced one. We got a lady directing this film. This was director Mary Lambert. She took over from...
Is that why we got so much man hate in this movie?
Well, maybe.
Is that what this is all about?
Maybe, but no. I'm going to make a sexist comment here. That's not sexist in the way you might think. This isn't anti-her. It's actually pro-her.
Right.
I was really surprised how scary this still is.
Oh, dude.
And I know that the source material is scary. It always is. Stephen King's books are always pretty scary. But the movie adaptations, they're some hit, some miss. Lots of misses, very few hits. Mm-hmm. This feels like a really, really faithful adaptation of at least the feeling of that book for me.
Right.
And keeping it creepy, keeping it crazy, and having some genuinely scary moments, some really creepy moments, and moments of you're not sure how you want to feel about it. And I've come to a conclusion that may sound sexist, all right? But just hear me out.
Oh, my gosh.
Just hear me out. Hear me out.
Oh, here we go.
I think.
When you pre-disclaim, when you put the disclaimer up front.
Yep. Pre-disclaim. Right. Here we go. I think that it is appropriate to say that women approach all situations with different sensibilities than men do. That's, part of what makes us different.
Right.
Would you put a few qualifiers in there, like most women, some men?
I'd say most, okay. Not all.
All right.
But clearly not all. I mean, I don't want RuPaul's not going to tell me how to make a sandwich, if that makes any sense. That doesn't make any sense at all. So anyway,
nope.
Mary Lambert, I feel like, is the right choice as director. They were going to have, and I forgot the name already, somebody who's done stuff we've watched. Oh, George Romero was signed on and then got canned, and then they brought her in.
Right.
That would have been him post Monkey Shines, and I think that's the fine choice to not have him in there. I don't think he's right for this stuff. Although it is zombies, I guess. But anyway, Mary Lambert, I just feel like approached this with a feminine brush, in the sense that they really pull especially hard on the strings that deal with the children and how horrible and shocking that would be.
Right.
Now,
right.
Part of this is, comes from the three of us have had sons who are this little kid's age. And without spoiling too much, but whatever, it's 89. The movie's
You got to spoil the hell out of
this. All right, we'll spoil
it. It's the only way we're going to get through it.
But
you should have watched it first.
But watching that, the way that was handled and the way they handled the rebirth of the kid, but also the killing of the kid and that truck and everything, there's something worse about the way they portrayed all that than I think may have happened if a dude would have done it. Now, since one didn't, I don't have a way to compare, so I don't know. But I feel like moms have a special, deeper connection with their kids,
right?
On a very emotional, raw level, on the most caretaky level possible,
right?
And it's, to me, I feel like I know it's a stretch, but having a female director come in here and do this, I feel like is the right touch. And I wish there were more horror movies directed by women, maybe screenplays by women, whatever, because I feel like horror movies could use a good dose of real horror in them. Right. And the things they fear, like having a kid wander out in the street and get hit by a semi, or a kid get lost in a mall and have some psychopathic killer steal your kid and have him be gone forever. Those kinds of concepts, I think women are primordially in tune with that happening. We're out killing the beast and bringing back the food, and we're doing the hunting and the gathering, and they're home trying to make it so people survive. And again, I know I'm stretching, but I feel like there's a piece of that here. I had a sense of it the minute I started it, and I felt that way all the way through.
You know, I didn't even look at the director before I started this movie, so I was not familiar with that Mary Lambert was the director. For some reason, I remember Stephen King kind of did a little bit of pseudo-directing for a while in some of his movies, and yeah. I wasn't sure if that's one of these. I'm glad that I didn't see where Scott is coming from, but as I rewind the film in my mind, I'm remembering parts of stuff that seems to be like the loneliness of Judd in his character.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you might would see that so much with a male director. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen.
Sure.
I'm just saying that this sensibility that you're talking about, I kind of see a reflection of what you may be saying. Yeah. I'm not defending what you're saying.
No.
I'm just saying I can
And there's nothing
see.
Nothing I'm saying. If anyone is offended by what I'm saying, then they're smoking crack. But Randy, your thoughts. Contrary, do you think I'm up in the night?
I have to go way back in your point. And just imagine starting up a reality TV show that was all RuPaul Subway, sandwich artist. I don't know why. I just think it would be so cool. Get on this.
All right.
RuPaul's Subway TV show. Okay, so.
I do not want RuPaul nowhere near my sandwiches.
No.
He is too angry. He would spit in that thing in a second.
I don't know. I don't know enough about RuPaul to make a judgment, but.
Yeah. So I thought the movie was fairly well directed.
Yeah.
Entire time I'm thinking about back when I read the book. I'm remembering things that I'd long forgotten, mm-hmm. and I'm finding this to be. And I realize I've already said this, but it's really fertile territory for comparing books to films.
Yeah.
And I constantly felt like where a book. Especially a Stephen King book, doesn't get there is with gory and gross.
Right.
Because he depends on it a lot. In fact, it's his right. It's his last card. He plays these cards like here's the question and here's the weirdness and here's the screaming. And then here's the gross. So it's always his last card he lays on the table. And it works fine in books, but in movies, it can be really something.
Yeah. And, well, because it's a visual medium, and sure.
And so this is where I hang a lot on the shoulders of the director. You have got to play to the strengths of the medium, and grossing me out is the place. This film was grotesque from beginning to end.
Yep.
I almost felt like every scene I was waiting for something really disgusting to come along.
Well, and I forgot we were waiting for Fred Gwynn's ankle to be sliced
Achilles,
open.
Achilles
tendon broken open like that.
That's the best.
Oh, good Lord. That just gives me the freaking willies. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but you're right. There's right. definitely that thing going
on. So there I'm saying that I guess if you want to talk about the gender of the director, then you're going to try to make a case that you should be surprised because women directors don't tend to go as gross. Although I would point you at a movie like The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Or just others of her. Bigelow does stuff.
Yeah.
Weird stuff.
Just a fantastic job of doing what you're supposed to do in a film based on a book, and not trying to spend so much time developing those relationships, because the book does it very, very well.
Yeah.
And you can't. You don't have time in a movie to do that.
Yeah. Now there are some problems though. With this thing.
Well, let's just talk about this for a second while we're talking about Mary Lambert, our director, who brought this film, I thought, fairly well and did a really good job bringing Stephen King, King's book to life. Yeah. Let's just talk about this some of these newer ones she's got. 2011, she directed Mega Python versus Gatoroid.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I just the title alone makes
Mega Python versus Gatoroid.
Gatoroid. Mm. And I can't wait on that kind of stuff. So.
How does the Mega Python deal with the huge alligator?
I don't know. Well, what is a Gatoroid?
Because a
huge alligator can hold his breath forever, right? So you just drag the python down to the bottom of the lake and let it. I don't know.
It, see, See, at first I was going to go, you know what? You know, we're giving this lady a hard time because she's a woman director. But we usually, when we have a male director, we kind of go through what they've done since then. Mm-hmm. And we weigh in on how well they've done since. And I must say, if you look through her list of stuff, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's done some video documentaries. Okay. With Madonna, Eurythmics. Okay. That's fine. Go-Go's.
Well, there's also a tiny bit of me. So I say all of that, but there's a little piece of me that worries that she was a one-hit wonder because the second, the sequel to this was pretty bad. It was pretty lousy.
And she directed it as well.
Mm, yeah. I have absolutely no love for the phrase one-hit wonder, but yes, this is a director who, let's get it really, really straight. This is a weird, quirky film. This is not a good movie. This is not the sort of thing that people are going to look at and go, oh, what a fine outing by this director. We should let her, you know, do the second unit on Saving Private Ryan. Yeah. Not going to happen.
Right.
And I think the history bears that out.
Mm, probably true.
You know, right. Yeah, you can definitely tell from what she's done since then. But I don't know. I think that she did such a fine job. This is early on. This is early on in her career, this Pet Sematary. So she may have made a career choice to go, you know what? I'm just going to do the smaller, simpler, I don't like big budget films. Screw you guys. Yeah. This could be decisions that she's making on her own. Don't know.
Yeah.
But I will say her directing was good enough that I never really noticed the directing. And that's when you really notice is when it's really poor. And, I think it was fine. I think I never really noticed it, never really thought too much about the direction until Scott didn't mention it.
I have a couple of issues with it, though.
What's that?
Well,
I do too. I have two issues here, and I'm going to establish them. Let's just imagine they're written down, and I now want to hear Scott's and find out if they're the same
thing. All right, well, I'll give you one of them. You tell me if this comes off your list.
Okay.
Now, everyone already knows I come in this with a predisposition to not like Denise Crosby.
Right.
All right. Now, I tried to park
Star
that.
Trek connection.
Listen, I tried to park that at the door. I really do, and I'm going to for the rest of this episode. I do not think, and this is the reason I don't like Denise Crosby. I don't think she's a very good actress. I think she's sufficient, but not very good. And this character's, you know, she's Tasha Yar here as well as she is on Star. I mean, she's not differentiating
she's
herself.
She's getting sucked up by black pools of crap.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's number one. Okay, but the bigger problem for me is Dale Midkiff. That guy gives me real trouble.
I think your number one and my number two are similar enough we can call them one and the same. And that is, I didn't like how the actors were directed.
Yeah, there's your it's the same thing.
I didn't like the delivery. I felt like I was watching sort of an 80s TV miniseries.
Except for Fred Gwynne for me. Fred Gwynne.
He surpassed, I felt like he surpassed sort of the limits that the directing was putting on him.
Yeah, we are on the same page.
Okay,
but
just focusing on Denise Crosby, and I'm saying that notice Lewis was directed.
I should focus on Dale Midkiff, who played Lewis. He is really my biggest problem, and my problem with that guy is for me to really get into his head and feel some empathy for this guy, I need him to have more than one expression. Because in this movie, he holds the same flat, dead expression and never changes it, really. There's a couple of ups and downs, a little angry acting here and there. But for the most part, that guy's face doesn't change, doesn't move. That can't be because he doesn't have that, at least a little bit of range. It's got to be because the director wasn't great at getting out of him what she needed. Or maybe he just sucks. But I've seen him in stuff recently, TV stuff, and he's all right. Thought he was horrible in this. Horrible.
I think that's an overall tone of a Stephen King movie, though. There's generally characters that are so, they're so destined for doom that there is no happiness. They're almost a sinkhole of happiness.
They're just they're just waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of characters where it's just it's inevitable, their fate is sealed, and so why fight it? I disagree. Maybe in movies, maybe that's been mistaken because I can think of other cases in Stephen King movies where it felt like that too. But the books don't feel like that. These are vibrant, interesting characters with range and pressure to survive and, you know, all of that stuff.
I felt like there was I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I felt like there was definitely a riff in the family. And as such, the acting where you're saying that people just, they seemed miserable and they didn't seem like they were just going through the motions. I've pretty much felt like Lewis Creed, his character was kind of being led along in his life, whether he liked it or not. And so if he was acting and overacting, I don't know if I would have accepted it as much. I think I like the fact, whether it was intentional or not, that he's so dead. And that Denise, you know, or whatever her name is, Rachel Creed, that her character is so angry and is just so mad. And I thought it worked well.
But that's a bit of reverse check in the box. So you're assuming some stuff went down before they made this move, that he was already kind of in this depressed state,
which was actually in the book.
And that's the thing.
That once again, you have this horrible decision to make, and that is, do I try to backstory this thing where I've got only 90 minutes to tell a bunch of relationship stories, or do I get right to the action?
Yeah.
Right. And maybe that's my problem too. Maybe since I've read the book and seen the movie, I'm getting some of this stuff, you know, preconceived in my head already.
Well, maybe that's a good thing, because, you know, true to a book, she's maybe assuming a lot of people have seen the source material. Like, who's going to go see Pet Sematary? Maybe back then in 1989, it was like, well, most likely people who've read this book. It was a bestseller for a while. There's a lot of people like that, so we don't have to spell everything out for them.
I did not like, except for Cemetery, because
they spelled that wrong.
I did not like the casting for this lead couple. I was thinking about if I was making this film today and I could get, you know, and I realized I'm now going to name people I could never get for this film.
But right.
Like, if I could get Carl Urban, for instance, he would be so good.
Oh, yeah. He would be great.
You know, and if I could get, like, Blake Lively or, I don't know. Kristen Stewart. How about Kristen Stewart? Just anybody.
Oh, my gosh. That would be...
anybody with some range, you know. Who can give me the feeling that they're, you know, that they're really genuinely horrified, because that's the thing. Like, with him, I never felt like he really cared as much as he needed to.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Like when your kid is killed in front of you, and by the way, there's a question I have for you guys that I want to hold on to there.
Right.
When your kid is killed in front of you, the wailing would go on for days.
Yeah.
Right. It would be the most be crushing, days. Devastating
be months,
thing.
It'd be the most horrible thing you could ever go through.
And I realize we're saying, well, they weren't directed to act that way, but they also didn't act that way anyway.
Right.
You know?
A montage of old photos of the kid is not enough.
No. Oh, my gosh. The wailing would go on.
It's not enough. And that, maybe that's really hard to portray. Maybe that's such an internal thing that it's difficult to do. And maybe that goes against what I said about her in the first place, that she's more adept at this. But. But
and like
right.
I said about the fence, it was portrayed stupid. Your kid got killed because you were really not paying attention to him near the death highway.
This is a horror movie. It's intended for you to sit there and go, no, don't do it. I mean, you're supposed to be doing the whole movie.
Okay, you're right.
I hear your point, which is don't try to insert realism into my schlock. But
right.
I still think that could have been blocked better. I really do.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying too. I don't think it was necessary. I don't think it's. We want our horror movie to have the horrible part, and we know what this book has in it. We need it to reproduce that, but there's no reason. They've been there a while now. Come up with.
Do you know how tragic things happen in real life?
No, they do, but they don't. They aren't usually because the dad turns around for 2 seconds while their 2-year-old toddler runs at a full.
All the time, people say, "I just turned around for 2 seconds. I thought everything was safe. We were having a great time." Bad things happen when you're having a good time.
I have personally experienced that, by the way. Yeah. I have personally experienced the whole thing where I genuinely felt like I was only not looking for a couple of seconds cannot believe how far, what a great distance a toddler can travel.
Oh, it's crazy. No, we've all been there. There's no question.
But this is a movie.
Right.
So how about build the fence, set up a picnic table next to it, leave a slat that can be pushed open by a toddler, and the adult doesn't know. We see that slat. You could build up so much tension and then have the child push through the slat and run, and the adult has to get over the fence and falls and shit.
Dude,
like,
my butthole was puckering as soon as he turned around and the kid was chasing the kite. I mean, I was like, no, no.
Yeah,
not,
but my
no.
butthole puckered more when Jibber Jabby over there ran for the kid and then tripped on himself.
Yeah. It's Shibby Shabby. Shibby Shabby.
Shibby Shabby, sorry. Shibby Shabby. Slimmy Slammy. Whatever it was she said later.
Shibby anyway, Shabby.
It's not that big a deal, but this is just one of many things. There were many things in this film that right. just had me scratching my head thinking, they should have thought about
it. Did you think that by the way, Bruce Campbell was originally supposed to play Lewis Creed. I kind of wish that would have happened. But
anyway. Oh, me too. We would have covered it 100 episodes ago.
Yeah, we would have. Right. If... I came to that scene or scenario of losing a child from a very biased position.
Right.
Of having three kids I care deeply for and would be just horrified by this sort of loss. It's the same reason Seven really bothers me, because when that movie came out, my wife was pregnant and I could not deal with what was in the box. Right. I just couldn't deal with it. That's why I threw that tape out or that DVD into the snow. I was so
now
angry at that movie.
Head, I know it. No!
I was so angry at that. And it's such a weird thing because I'm not angry at the filmmaker. I'm not angry at the writing. I'm not angry at the acting. I'm angry at actual characters. And that's right. an odd thing for me. Well, when I watch this, I'm again coming from this biased position of, man, not only does that kid look like Nick did at his age.
Right.
It's weird to me how a little blonde moppy hair and he talked like that. And by the way, the kid may be the best actor in the whole movie.
Right.
But anyway, when all that goes down and happens and what? The shock of seeing what happens and them not really flinching, they're not super gory, but they're not flinching.
Right.
That is pretty brave filmmaking, I think. I don't think you get to do that anymore.
You can't kill a, and even then you couldn't kill a kid in a story without the way they end up bringing the kid back and that type of thing. Stephen King is very very pushy in that way. But I watched this at the theater in 89. I had no kids. And I remember thinking, "Oh my God, somebody save that kid," because you want to pull on people's emotions, you kill a kid or an animal in a movie, and oh my gosh.
You kill innocents and there's trouble.
Right. You kill a man, who cares?
Well, you know, you got a guy, you know, Roadhouse, and the guy's a douche, kill him.
Right, kill him, whatever.
But is
kid's
this
a douche.
Little...
You know what? The little girl in this movie, I wanted her to die way more than that little kid.
So what you're saying is that there's a tightrope here to walk, and that is if you have a kid break away from its parents' care and basically kill itself, that is not going to get you the backlash that, for example, having a serial killer walk up and slit a kid's throat will get you. Like,
dear Lord, it would be the
really,
worst.
Really bad idea to have violence against children unless it's accidental.
Yeah.
Or if it's the Hunger Games, whichever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But when they're killing each other, you can deal with it.
Right.
But when it's just like this.
But if an adult came in there, oh man.
I guess that throughout the movie, maybe this is why the movie worked. It just constantly held me with this terrible deed and it just never let go. Like that was always a problem all the way to the end for me. And I just was like, and now when the kids come back to life and he's evil version of the kid and he just, you know, keeps talking about, I want to play, daddy, you want to play? And, but playing to him now is taking us, you know, a knife and cutting your neck open.
Right.
It is the reason the movie, I think, holds up. And if they would have pulled back on all that stuff back then and said, well, we can't have this. This is too much. I think the movie wouldn't be nearly as effective.
Let me tell you the most important part of this movie and its continued success, cult success as well, in a small amount. Fred Gwynne steals this movie.
Yes.
That's because he talks like this. I heard tell easy. If you walk down to the pet cemetery.
I don't remember the last time I heard a rural Maine accent. It's and awesome. So I'm not here to say that it's dead on because I'm not sure that it is.
Right.
But I am here to say whatever he did here going for a rural Maine accent was brilliant.
It is. It's great. Right.
And for those people who are too young to remember, this is from he's the monster. He's Herman Munster. And this was big for us back in the day because this is the first time we've seen Herman Munster in a long time.
Yeah, no, he hadn't yet done the My Cousin Vinny bit.
And, right.
Died not too long after that. What was it, 94?
It's not around there.
95 he died, yeah. He was only 66
speaking of,
or something.
I would love to do My Cousin Vinny.
93.
Oh, I would too, dude.
It's been on streaming forever, and I hope it stays on streaming forever. But My cousin Vinny really challenges the film sack model, like you know, the way that the way that straight comedies do.
That's true. And that is so good.
Oh, it's just so much fun to watch. I wish we could, if we ever did a live stage show film sack where we all sat with a crowd and watched a film, I would be pushing.
Plus,
for
then
that.
We could say right. We did two Ralph Macchio movies without having to watch right. another one of those crappy Karate Kid movies.
Oh wow, I did not know this. Yeah. In 2007, there was a. I wonder how they put him in here. My Fair Monster, unaired pilot one. Apparently, he was in that. Of course, he died back in 93.
I'm sure it was like
posthumous.
Yeah, right. Something posthumous.
Posthumous. Almost like exhumed.
Did you notice that his dog's name he referred to in the movie is Spot, which is also the name of the family pet on the Munsters, which is kind of a nice little nod.
Did you guys get a chance to read all the tombstones?
Some of them.
Oh, dude, they're so good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
And that's straight Stephen King right there. Yeah. I mean, what he's so good at is weird kitsch. He's so amazing at thinking about what the characters are experiencing and sort of painting it for you, if you will.
How many Stephen King movies does this make for us? Is this just one?
No, is it? Because we didn't see any yet. Because until recently, he was not. You could not find any Stephen King movies on Netflix.
I swear there's one other though. I swear we've recently, seen something.
We've seen Lawnmower Man.
Oh, that maybe is what I'm thinking of.
But that was the only one that was really.
That was just a short story. I think that is what I'm thinking of.
Right, and
one of his Richard Bachman joints, right?
Exactly, because I was really wanting to push in, you know, the Silver Bullet and all that stuff, and I kept looking forever, and I said, well, I want to just watch some Stephen King movies, and I never could find any on Netflix, and it just recently they just like boom, all on there. Yeah. And of course, if you guys are listening, you know they're starting to pull them back off.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bastards. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. Hopefully, when you're hearing this, you've already been able to see the movie before it gets pulled.
Right.
We've been trying to tell you.
I know two gets pulled, or two doesn't get pulled. Right, two's still up.
If you're listening to this and you're thinking, how did I miss getting to see Pet Sematary because it expired on streaming? Twitter.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. It's one word answer, Twitter.
At FilmSack.
Follow FilmSack, please. Yeah.
Easy sneezy. By the way, the sister, Zelda, the one with her little story, that was a dude.
You're right. I didn't know it either. And, back in the day, that creeped me out.
Freaky stuff, which is why they used him because they couldn't make a 13-year-old girl look scary enough. So what do? You put a dude in there.
They said they couldn't find a girl skinny enough that was, and they had to get this guy, and that's so weird. And you know what's even weirder than that? I was like, my son was asking me, is that how spinal meningitis really does? I'm like, I don't know. Let me Google it. If you Google spinal meningitis,
it's an infection of the spine. It's horrible.
I know, but half the pictures are of her from this movie.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Oh, you're right.
It's weird.
That is weird. There's a bunch of her and her.
Right. So here you are. Your daughter just told you got spinal meningitis. So you get on the internet, look it up. I'm like, oh my God.
I know. That's the
worst. I'm gonna like this.
I didn't really need that subplot in this film.
No, it's in the book. So do you think that's why it just got forced in?
Yeah. But like the book contains a bunch about the old man's past.
Yeah.
Judd's past that is left out of this movie, and I feel like that could have been left out of this movie. I didn't like it. It just feels like extra horror.
And didn't really inform anything, did it? It didn't have any impact on the story.
I can't be dealing with all this extra horror
because wasn't that her problem? Is she was like, oh, I remember this horrible thing. I'm going to go hang out with my parents. Like that was the whole reason it existed.
Plus, it made so many things so much creepier. Though, I mean, like when she was calling. You know, calling her husband, and she's standing in front of. They got that worm's eye view of her talking on the phone, and spinal meningitis girl is behind her when she was a kid, and she's dressed up as like the blue boy or something.
Yeah.
I guess that was foreshadowing that it was going to be a boy. but it was just really weird, and you know, if you wasn't watching, you wouldn't realize at the end her son is wearing that same little outfit. Mm-hmm. That her sister wore.
His little burial outfit, right?
Right. It was very, it was weird.
Oh, but he just reminded me when they're dropping coffins and his little hands in there and just, I can't deal with little kids being in trouble. I can't deal with it.
And that's what I was going to get at. I could have done with way less and even zero amount of spinal meningitis sister in exchange for more horror on the cat and the little kid.
Yeah. No, I was done with the cat.
Church and Gage, I felt, were so strong once they were zombified. Like, they were scary as hell. They made me just itch. I couldn't sit. I wanted to stand and fidget.
Yeah.
While anytime the cat or Gage were on the screen. And, of course, the cat was just... They had, I don't know what they did, but they
seven
had a cat.
Cats was the main thing. It's seven trained cats. They had all doing weird stuff.
A British short hat cat's name.
But there's a spot where he goes out to try to take care of the cat with a steak.
Yeah.
And he throws
he's talking about the meat, people. He's not talking about a wooden steak.
Yeah, meat.
He throws a piece of meat down and the cat goes for it, and then he grabs a cat and gives it a shot.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they did. I'm wondering if they got a real cat drunk, or if at that point they had the ability to make a robotic cat that was that realistic.
Trivia says that it was actually one of the seven cats, and they were all trained to play dead. And I don't know how you train a cat to do that, so I don't know.
I don't know how you train a cat to do anything. Right. Cats are very headstrong.
Right. I don't even know if it's possible that you can even do
that. That was amazing. And in that moment, I thought, oh, we haven't got enough of the cat, because that was amazing.
Yeah, the cat was kind of cool. He's gross, though. I don't like that kind of cat at all. Mm. I think that cat's disgusting, but he scared me a bunch. any cat can come throw a dead rat in your lap. Ugh.
A film with the final scene of this film, and that's your gross
out? Well, not entirely, but the dead rat in the tub was
tub was awesome. I thought it was incredible.
He's just settling in for the night, chilling out in his tub. Bloop! There's a big old bloody rat in his lap.
Over the last year or so of my life, a little more than that. So basically, recently in my life, I have really gotten to like taking a bath.
Yeah.
Like taking a bath is something that.
Thank God.
It's something that is kind of forced on you as a kid, and then you get older, and then efficiency becomes a big deal especially when you're in college and you get in the habit of showering all the time. And it's just recently in my life, I've really gotten to love taking a bath. And I will like go to CVS and just walk around and look at the bubble bath and stuff.
Made make fun of Randy.
I know. Yes. Stop that right now. That scene just got me because it really hit me in that you are the most vulnerable moment of your day.
Oh, yeah. You got your doodle out. You're laying there.
You don't got it covered up with a rag or nothing.
You're in a rag on your face. There's a rat in your lap. It's bleeding. You don't know why. Freaking cat up in the corner with his yellow eyes. Little bastard. Yeah, that's pretty effective stuff, that cat. I'll give you that. Some pretty good cat tech on display here.
But you know what? The bad thing is that scene, even though it was creepy, also kind of made me go, eh, because that's a sign of affection and love and gratitude that a cat brings you something dead. So
by the way,
like,
Gage and Church, it sounds like the best freaking buddy comedy cop movie I've ever heard of.
Gage and Church.
Yeah, it's like the spinoff of Mike and Molly.
Right. You know, by the way, that kid that played Gage is a fine-looking, really working dude.
Really messed up.
No, he's working like crazy. He's all over Hollywood doing all kinds of stuff.
When he's slouching down on that wall and stuff, I'm like, this kid is just creepy. He's a little bit too good.
Really good, yeah.
All right, so you've come around to my weird question.
Go.
How does Gage get run over by a truck on the highway? And his body is still okay enough when it resurrects.
Right. That he can wobble.
Like, I don't get that. Like, everybody else I understand. Like, you took a blow to the head. Now there's this thing and you got the skull fragment. I got it.
It's like a time travel question. There. They don't want you asking that question because you're absolutely right.
Actually, I did ask that question, and actually, I did think about it. And one of the things I was thinking when the truck was about to hit him, these semi trucks are pretty high off the ground. He's a little kid, and he's squatting down, so it might have just hit him on the top of the head because the truck driver swerved so much that he flipped the truck.
Could have been, yeah. They never got back to that guy's a chick in the box for sure. I didn't even thought about him.
That guy is the chick in the box of this film. You brought it up earlier.
I disagree.
I disagree too. I have a different one. But now that we mention him, he's in the running now that I'm thinking about
it. There's actually several, actually.
Yeah, there's
several. Think about it. But he doesn't quite fit our film sack trope for that either, because he wasn't introduced until 30 seconds before his big scene. But
it's not chicken in the box, is it? It's chicken in a basket.
Chicken in a bucket.
In a bucket.
Chicken in a bucket. All right, I don't want to get this wrong. It's a fantastic meme, and we got to keep it right. All right, chicken in a bucket. Sorry.
So anyway, but it is classic Alfred Hitchcockian cinema when the truck driver's coming along, because they keep cutting to him and showing you him for a few seconds, and he's driving and he's speeding up and he's going faster and he's breaking the law and he's
got
going,
the Ramones and like on 11 in his car.
Right, he's exactly singing the Ramones, who does some of the songs on the soundtrack of this, and he's a horrible singer, so you absolutely understand his backstory, the reason why he's a truck driver.
You get a little insight into that character, is that what you're saying?
Right, absolutely. He's like, well, he can't sing. Right. Tried that at karaoke night, didn't work out, so he's a truck driver.
But Randy's right. It's a total projection of what's coming. It's like, oh, really? We're going to keep cutting back and forth? I wonder what that means. What else? The little girl actor, who I guess was, there were twins. One of the girls is...
name? Was it Rachel?
Rachel. Is it? Or is that the mom? I can't remember.
Rachel's the mom.
I have her.
Ellie was the
Ellie. Ellie, thank you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, how annoying.
She was one of those annoying, precocious actor kids. And it's two girls. It's a sister pair that acts. And you could tell.
I fell on the tire swing.
Shut up.
I have that later. She was super annoying. And so I never could get behind feeling any kind of empathy for her. But here's another. So here's chicken in the box or chicken in the bucket number one. Her shining to me is a chick in the bucket. She's got all this foreshadowing going on. She's having a dream anytime anyone dies or gets hurt or something terrible happens, and she's describing it exactly. Dad, I had a dream the cat died. Dad, I had a dream mom died. Like, she's doing it exactly. She's got the shining.
Right.
They don't address that at all. There's no resolution to it. There's no anything other than the parents of trying to fumble over themselves to tell her a lie about what she's dreamt is just a dream. And that's it. So chick in the bucket number one or two, I guess now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Number two.
Now, the bigger chick in the bucket for me is probably Missy, who was not in the book.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell was that for?
I was so frustrated by Missy.
Extra horror, Randy. That's what that is. More extra horror.
It was.
And it's extra horror.
It felt like it was added by Stephen King himself.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, we haven't talked about this. He does actually have a role in this film.
Pretty sweet cameo, yeah. The mullet.
But he is so good at mixing supernatural horror with a touch of real fear that we all have of cancer and, you know, any type of disease. He puts these in here. He puts psoriasis in one. And Thinner, the guy has psoriasis. And this one, you know, you got the meningitis. I mean, he does that so well.
Yeah. And the dude with the brain half out, who's just always through this thing, the ghost guy, that just gave me the willies every time he was on. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Totally gave me that whole Werewolf in London thing, which I love, which I think is fantastic.
Just having guys stand in the background, nobody else can see but you, and half his head's hanging out. I just have such a. The vibe is. I know what the vibe is. The vibe is The Shining. This is the. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's funny. The closer we get to actual Stephen King quality film adaptations of books, the more those few movies seem very similar in tone. Like, that's what they're capturing, is the tone. The Shining has the same freaking tone this movie does.
Right. Remember the old lady in the shower? Ooh, oh, man. Geez. That was bad.
I'd really not to ever like to see that again.
Right?
Struggled with that movie when I was younger. Really had a hard time with it.
I am surprised we haven't spent more time comparing this film to Monkey Shines.
Yeah,
because it's got
which we thought was a Stephen King movie at first.
Yeah,
and we thought so very honestly.
Yeah,
the film has a lot in common with it, and I can't help thinking that somebody needs to make a modern resurrection, but things are zombified movie, and again with Carl Urban, because
he's a great pick.
Right.
Great pick. I'm with you, man. Bones is the man.
Like, there's just, I don't know, there's something there.
They're rebooting this Pet Sematary. They've already written a script.
Of course, that's the film Sat Curse. We watch the film, and then you have to reboot it.
And Eli Roth was going to direct. Now that's all falling apart because I don't think Stephen King likes
goodness.
The way he does
have
things.
Am I on record as hating Eli Roth enough?
I'm not a big fan either. I think it's fine to have somebody else. I want somebody with a more cerebral take on this. You're right, it needs to gross you out.
Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, that won't happen. But I would love to see something with a defter touch than just, you know, torture porn man doing this. So now it's all kind of up in the air as to who's doing it, but it does sound like it's something that would happen. I could totally get behind, you know, this movie being remade. I'd be all right with that.
I'm going to watch this with my kids, 11, 14.
Yeah.
And they were...
Oh, 11? That would have...
Yeah, 11's a little young for me, Brian. Yeah,
you got to... you know, it's close, but he has a very... He has a... he likes horror movies, and he loves watching Goosebumps, and he loves watching, you know, all the... You know, Are You Afraid of the Dark? He loves to watch all of those things, so...
Yeah.
If he wasn't,
it does depend on the kid.
Yeah, if he wasn't into that kind of thing, I might be worried. But he, you know, he kind of wanted to watch this, and it's funny because near the end of the movie, he's like, "I don't want to watch anymore." And I'm like, "I said, then close your eyes or go into the room. It's no big deal, you know. It's just."
Pre or post ankle?
It was right near the ankle when the suspense was the highest.
Oh, jeez, that was so hard to watch.
And he was like, "No, I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens."
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I have three places I never want a knife to be.
Right.
Number one. The noodle and the
Frankenbean.
The Frankenbeans.
Yeah. You don't want to cut the nut. But right.
I do not want that ever. Oh my gosh, just to die. And then the other one is ankle or you know, Achilles tendon. That tendon is a special one. And then anything to do with any of the tender spots. Like your
tender spots.
Like the veins and the artery, the arterial stuff in your pits and in your neck and
in the pits
groin, those kinds of things. Oh my gosh. So when they did that, and I'm thinking to myself, somehow it's worse. Somehow it's worse that it's like 75-year-old Fred Gwynn.
Right.
For some reason. He wasn't that old. But,
I don't even know if that was his foot because
No way it was his foot. Well, I hope that to hell it wasn't his foot.
Nah!
They really went out for their little snuff
film. Sometimes dead is better.
Sometimes dead is better. Now help me bring this jelly in. He's got that perfect. I hear tale if you go up north, those folks up there. I love that voice.
Tell me you wouldn't love Fred Gwynn to tell you a scary story, man. You would love it.
Oh, he was so good.
I would love it. It's like, where's this pet cemetery? Well, I hear some say if you walk too far to the, you know, just that whole bit is just awesome. I love that in any kind of movie where there's a guy, an old farmer dude,
right,
who will bust in and start telling you a story. I love it. Love it.
Fantastic.
Let's see. So what else?
Well, I never got to mention my chicken.
No, chicken in the bucket.
Yeah. The chicken bucket for me was when they set old Judd's house on fire and they never came back to it. I mean, he didn't just set it on fire. He set it ablaze.
Yeah.
And, you know, trucks were coming down the road. Never one time did a fire truck show up. Yeah. I mean, I know it's...
Well, fire truck or not, not even the semis were stopping. You know?
No, this is like, whatever. Yeah. I don't care.
All right, so we got Missy, we got the daughter shining, we've got the truck driver, and we've got your house.
Rich
Randy,
house.
I don't think we've done your chick in the bucket.
No, I was actually going with the truck driver.
Oh, all right. I think if you vote, truck driver wins because they just left him.
Although, comparing the movie to the book, I guess I could stretch and say Judd's wife.
Yeah.
Right.
Judd's wife is nowhere near as important in the movie as it is in the book.
Is she even around?
Just in pictures. Just in pictures in the house.
But yeah, in the book, what is her status? I can't remember.
In the book, you find out the horrible thing that Judd may have killed her because she cheated on him.
Oh.
He may have pushed her in front of a truck. We don't know.
And then you find that out because Gage, who when he returns from as a zombie baby, Gage has has all of this knowledge and he talks like an adult.
Oh,
right.
And he goes and has a talk with Judd. Gage goes to Judd's house.
Such a creepy scene. That would have been perfect in the movie.
Yeah, you're right. But Gage goes to Judd's house and has this awful discussion where he basically gives you the impression, and Stephen King really nails it here. He gives you the impression that Judd may have killed his wife and then may have tried to resurrect her. You don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
It is my recollection. I spent this whole movie trying to recall the damn book.
Yeah, I don't remember enough of the book. I remember the book just leaving me terrified, but I don't remember a lot of the details.
Still not. I wouldn't put it in Stephen King's top five.
Oh, interesting. What is his top five? What would you say?
Oh, this is an interesting topic. Brian Dunaway.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if I can do the top five because a lot of them fall along the same lines after they get out to my top couple of ones.
That's fine. Misery
is my absolute favorite Stephen King book. I read it in one sitting. I said, started, read the whole thing.
Never read Misery. Seen the movie, never read the book.
Fantastic.
It's a short story, right? No, novella, right?
It's novella? It's a full novella. I think it was 300-400 pages.
Well,
or something.
Novel or novella, like they're if it's 400-500 pages, I'd call that full on novel.
Oh, it's
right?
Definitely a novel.
Yeah,
full on novel, baby.
I don't even know.
And but it was fantastic. Loved it. I still love the short stories. I'm gonna have to say the short stories are in my seconds because there's so many great short stories that he's written.
Yeah.
That those are, I would have to say, number two.
Read Shawshank, by the way. It's really interesting.
Shawshank is absolutely in my
very
in my
different story. Than the movie, but very interesting, I thought.
And then It is actually up there, too. It's a monster of a book to read, but it is fantastic.
All right. My list is very different, and then I want to get around to Randy. My list is more – I'm taking the Dark Tower series out of this because I don't think it's –
Fair.
It's my favorite thing. My favorite Stephen King book is in the Dark Tower series.
Same here. And so I can't. I don't want to count that yet. Just I don't know why that whole series is my favorite. Well, you know what? I will. I'll just say, you know what? Dark Tower in its entirety is my favorite thing he's ever written. All right. So that's number one.
There's your top five.
There's my yeah.
Right.
But I'll call that one. If I had to give a number two, it'd probably go to. I'm going to get a lot of heat for this, but I really responded to this, and it's probably because I love a good end of world story.
I
do love The Stand, but I love The Cell, the one about the cell phones that go off and make everyone turn into crazed zombies.
You know, I never read that. That's one of the ones that's on my list. It came out at a weird time.
Loved it, and it's because I have a thing for the zombies and the post apocalyptic and that, and that really milked that for me. So that was number. That's probably number two for me. And then kind of an odd one is Insomnia,
that's funny. That's like
Insomnia is tied to the Dark Tower series in a weird way.
Is it really?
It is. I did not know that. Not entirely. It's not like that's not part of the series, but it deals with the Crimson King and some other stuff. Yeah. So it's thrown in there.
It really lets you remind you that Stephen King gets how to write in a way to bring you to a topic. And you really feel the insomnia of that book.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Right?
And that's also, I think,
characters too. Yeah.
I think that's also the book where he makes what I consider the ultimate philosophy, the Stephen King doctrine, which is that writing is like uncovering furniture.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I have always returned to that concept.
It's really interesting.
That you have a basement and there's all this dusty covered furniture and writing is like sending some guys in there to uncover it. Like, it's already there for you. You just have to find it. You know, you just have to find your way through writing a book or whatever. As a writer, I think about that regularly.
It's a lot of hyperbole, but I think it's cool. And the other thing about Insomnia that's neat is, well, actually, the character, the main protagonist in Insomnia is an old guy. Guy's in his, like, late 60s, early 70s. Unusual. It's not something you normally do is rooting for this old guy, especially in a lot of action-packed moments and some other stuff. I thought that was really an interesting twist. But that very character shows up, I want to say, in book 6 of The Dark Tower.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so there's a lot of tie back to that, which is probably why I like it also. Truthfully, I don't like it. There's nothing I've read that I didn't like. I really like The Dome. I think The Stand is awesome.
But you're naming his top. You're naming books that are firmly in his top 10. Do you really feel like you've read some of the crappy ones?
Or Under the Dome, I guess. No, you know what? I haven't gone out of my way to make sure that I'd read.
It's hard. He puts one out by every year.
I'm trying to think of something I wouldn't have enjoyed. What's the one where
Langoliers? What was it?
Well, like Cujo was kind of dumb for me.
Cujo was in.
But that's a short.
I watched the movie. The movie was. Whew,
so let me give you some. Let me give you some crap Stephen King books.
Go for it.
Rose Matter.
I didn't read that one.
Tommyknockers.
Haven't read.
I also heard that was crap. So yeah,
Dreamcatcher.
Haven't read it.
Oh, we forgot about The Green Mile. That's a fantastic book.
Yeah. Regulators.
Don't remember that. How about Firestarter?
Gerald's Game.
Gerald's Game is great.
No, it's awful.
Oh, I disagree. It's not my top five, but I think that's a good book.
Black House. Black House was the book everybody was reading the week of 9/11.
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember that.
And therefore was bad. Okay. So, well, actually, one of his worst books is one of my favorite. So let me just get there.
Oh, I forgot. I love The Mist. Sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, that's a bit. That's
no,
not
no,
good
it is good.
I don't like that. No,
it okay, is. So it me, is. It's just, post-apocalyptic.
No,
damn it. Let me just,
no, whatever, Scott. Whatever. No.
Okay. Right. So it for me, and I'm just gonna name like his most famous books for me because I'm really like I am the populace. Yeah. It, The Stand. We already said The Stand.
Yeah.
The Stand is probably his best book.
Yeah, it's good. Real good.
Misery. I'm with you on Misery. Mm. Okay. The Shining.
Yes.
And then I have to say, in the Dark Tower series, Wizard and Glass may very well be my favorite book of all time. I always say, drop the first bit and the last bit. Drop the bookends. Give me the story of a young gunslinger falling in love and putting together together the most impressive gunfight I've ever read about. And I read a lot of Louis L'Amour books.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, Stephen King writes the greatest gunfight I've ever read.
That's great.
That is the best book in the series, period.
So and then the thing that so you good. Could read some about the, a gunfight, that would be interesting.
So good. Because, but you got to remember, this is like, I mean, you're basically reading a fantasy novel where the swords are guns. And it's just so... Mm-hmm. It is so great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the rest of the series. I didn't want to leave
Wizard
that time.
Wizard in Glass is so good that he does the exact same thing in Wolves of the Cala.
Yeah.
He actually writes the same story with different characters and a slightly different setting, and Wolves of the Cala is great, too.
Yeah. It seems familiar that I'm writing. I don't know where it's coming from. It seems familiar.
But a lot of people I talk to about that series hate Four. And I don't know. I think there's smoke in the crack because it's great.
I will go buy a copy of Wizard and Glass and rip off the first and last part with the talking train and just give you the middle 85% of the book. It's the best thing he's ever written. Yeah. And then my crappy Stephen King book that I love is Needful Things. Needful Things. Nobody likes Needful Things.
Oh, no. I got Gerald's Game mixed up with Needful Things. Needful Things is the book, is the one I really like. That's the one with the dude at the store that sells all the stuff that ruins everyone's lives.
Satan comes to a little town in rural Maine. Yeah.
Wait. Was that also, didn't they like do a film adaptation of that or something?
Yes. There's a Needful Things movie, and it couldn't ever possibly be as good as the book because the book is about the stories of 36 different people and how this one person manages to intertwine them all. And you could never do that in a movie.
No. You'd have to
make like a movie like Crash or something.
You'd have to
like,
get Joss Whedon, Tarantino, and bring back from the dead the guy that made MASH and have all those guys together and make because it's the worst ensemble challenge of all time.
Needful Things would make such a good miniseries.
I agree. Oh, yeah. Do it like American Horror Story. Each season is one of those stories, man. And then just move on to the next one. And the only constant is this guy that sold you the shit that ruined your life.
And I also read it when I was like 16, and I didn't realize that he was Lucifer. I didn't realize the main character ended up getting played by,
he's the devil.
I know who it was. It was Max von Sydow, yeah?
Right, yeah. It ended up getting played by Max von Sydow. Yeah. That whole book, I get to the last chapter and finally realize,
it's the devil.
Don't you love when you can be fooled and then you want to go out and you want to tell everybody else, like, oh, it fooled me so much. And everybody else goes,
especially a
book
like that.
I knew it in chapter one. Like, shut up.
All right, one last one. I love Salem's Lot, but that's just it's a raw early King thing, and it always freaks me out.
I got one last more.
What do you got?
On Writing, a Memoir of the Craft. One of the
that's
best
a,
books
that's
he
a
has.
A really good book.
I haven't
that
read it.
An awesome book. It kind of chronicles his a little bit about his life and how he writes, and it's just, it's good.
All right, well.
I highly recommend that. If you haven't read Salem's Lot, I'm sorry, it's too late. It's been ripped off so much that when you do read it, you'll be like, oh, this is not that great. But if you can go read On Writing, it'll hold up wonderfully.
All right. We'll go check it out. Let's move on to...
We have clips.
There's some clips. Yeah, we got a bunch. Now, this is going to surprise people. Movie holds up, still scary. We've had some pretty serious conversations about horror and what works and what doesn't.
Right.
You're going to be kind of blown away about how Benny Hill, the actual sound of the movie is.
Oh, my God.
Right?
There is some stuff in here that, you know, but partially it's because I'm listening for crap, but there's some stuff in here that will just surprise you. So anyway, I'm just going to get cranking.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Before you get started, my favorite trope in the film is the big no.
Oh, we didn't do a trope. Yeah.
Did you capture the big no?
The big no? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I got the no.
Okay. Because that moment in the film, no.
My file name has about 20 O's in it. But.
All right. That's all I want. That's my favorite trope in the film. So I'm glad we got
it. All right. We got that coming up. Creepy kid music is when you know your movie's going to be too weird to handle. Here's a bit of that. Oh, don't do that. All right.
Only slightly better than frogs.
Here is some 10 seconds of bad kid acting. It's that little girl.
Mommy, Daddy, help! Mommy, Daddy, help!
Are you okay? Kill that.
And the parents are so stupid. It's like, what's the matter? What's going on? Are you okay? What's going on?
What happened?
That was not real parenting. If it was real parenting, you'd be over there going, I just told you not to swing on the stupid swing.
Yeah, there was some. Yeah, plus his just dead face. There was no emotional change in that guy's face ever. Right. Here's some of that sweet, sweet Maine accent.
I live just across the road. You want to watch out for that road? Them damn trucks go back and forth all day and most of the night.
My kids couldn't understand a word he was saying when he first started. What did he say?
It loses a huge amount of appeal to me if you don't have him doing that. I'd love it. Yeah. Love it. Let's see. Here is one of many things you'll hear in the movie. That and a lot.
Oh, so tired of it already.
Yeah, freaking you out every 5 minutes.
Right.
The cat would be walking along and he'd like turn and the cat would make that sound. Have these filmmakers ever been around a cat?
Nope.
Cats never make that sound.
No.
But cats love to be silent.
So you step on them.
Yeah. They went ahead and made sure to clear up the spelling error so people who watch the movie aren't confused. So here's that.
It says Pet Cemetery, honey. It's misspelled, but that's what it says.
So
thank you, sweetheart.
Thank
I'm not
you,
a
Tasha.
Moron.
Thank you, Mrs. Yar. So I'm trying to think here. 89. This was during or just post her time on Trek because she started in 87. I think she was done by then.
Yeah, this is the reason why she. This is the reason why she left the show.
What? She left for one movie?
Pursue higher. No.
Oh, just movies in general.
Yeah,
that didn't go well.
Wasn't that her plan? I'm leaving the show. I can't stretch here.
It was weird watching Dexter kill her a couple of seasons ago on Dexter. She's one of the of his victims.
She's always getting killed and everything.
Yeah, she gets killed and everything. And she was wrapped in plastic goo then, too. It's weird.
Right.
Anyway, here is, just to clear up, I already did that. I don't remember what this is, sir. Here.
Yuck!
Oh. What was it from?
He threw Gage through some kind of food on her.
Oh, food's her face.
She was complaining again. I was like, shut up.
Yuck!
Poor kid. Then she talked about cutting the cat's nuts.
I don't want Church to get his nuts cut, Daddy.
No, I don't want to get Church. Me either. And the way the parents look at each other. So precocious.
You gave him that word.
Yeah. About him getting his nuts cut. Right. Give me a break. Don't act like it just came out of nowhere.
Well, no, they did. Got it from the cancer lady, the housekeeper. She's the one who told it to him.
She said, you know what they're doing there? They're going to cut the cat's nuts. You think that's what got said?
Cut the nut. That's what they say it in the story because she goes out and she goes, thanks for saying the thing in front of the thing.
Oh, I missed that. All right.
Missy
also had a great accent. And was
that was my favorite performance in the film.
She was really
good. She was intended to really bother you as a viewer.
Yeah.
And boy, did she.
Yeah, she did. Let's see. Here's that thing Brian talked about earlier.
Don't shilly-shally, Lewis. Give the little girl a promise.
Come on.
That's
not a phrase.
It
you tell
is.
You. No.
It is.
It's not shilly-shally. It's don't. What's.
No. It is
dilly-dally.
Dilly-dally.
Thank
you.
Dilly-dally. But if you look up shilly-shally, which I did on the internet, it's in the dictionary, my friend.
Are you sure? Because that sounds like Steve Buscemi saying Silly Sally after he got his face shot off by that old guy in Fargo.
Do I like I made this up? And in an irresolute,
you
undecided, or hesitating matter, it's irregular reduplication of shall I, first use 1700. First of all, I'm like going a little far back with the Shilly Shally.
1700, jeez. Yeah. I've never heard it in my life.
I had never heard. I had to look it up because I was like, that's not a word.
Yeah. It's one of those
I would have lost that on Scrabble. Yeah. Right?
A long time ago, I was fortunate enough to work in a job that let me forced me to travel around the United States, and I spent some time in New England and in rural Maine. Mm. And I'm here to tell you, really amazing part of the world. People do have some strange idioms, some different language. Everybody should spend some time there. So I wasn't tripped up by this, but I could see how you are.
Yeah.
My dad lived in Maine, so I was up there a lot, but I never heard shilly shally.
Does your dad ever tell you old stories when did he ever talk like that? Do you have that?
Not once. He's a Southern boy, and he moved up to the Maine for a while, and then they had the whole layoff thing, and he's like, okay, come back south.
We just finished bottling jelly for the winter.
that's actually pretty much a real thing.
I had an old friend who lived in Vermont. They have similar sound to them as this guy, and it just warms my heart. It's like Scottish accents. I get all fuzzy about it. All right, who said you were dreaming?
I don't like this dream.
Who said you were dreaming?
That guy's great.
Said you were dreaming.
He's creepy, dude.
So he reminded me of a fairly main character on Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Male or female?
Male.
Okay.
Well, it's kind of hard. It's confusing sometimes.
Not that I don't know the difference. I'm just trying to make sure I'm on
my
the right.
Problem is I haven't seen the new BSG in a while, and I never mind. Let's just go
fairly
on.
The main bad guy, Jesus hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much. Oh, that's interesting. Very, very much the same affectation. He's also reminds me of the Donnie Wahlberg character in The Sixth Sense.
Dreamcatcher. Oh, I thought you were going to go with Dreamcatcher.
No,
okay.
He was in Dreamcatcher.
Yeah. No. Donnie Wahlberg. Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No,
right.
You're thinking of Mark Wahlberg.
Not Donnie. No. Donnie was in Dreamcatcher.
Well, Donnie. All I know is Donnie's the kid in the diaper in his underwear in the first part of Sixth Sense that shot Bruce Willis.
Right.
And he looks like this guy.
And he's the guy, the mentally handicapped guy in Dreamcatcher.
I do not remember Dreamcatcher at all.
Also a Stephen King movie. You don't remember Morgan Freeman?
No. Well, I know Morgan Freeman. I remember in a movie where everybody was on jet skis, he yelled, "We just want the money." I remember that.
We just want the money.
What is that movie? It's got Christian Slater in it, and there's a scene where he's famous.
Right, it's Hard Rain. That's Hard Rain.
Yes. We just want the money.
My gosh.
The trailer.
Donnie Wahlberg plays Duddits in Dreamcatcher.
I'll take your word for
it. If you haven't seen Dreamcatcher, you should watch it.
He's in the third Saw movie, Donnie Wahlberg is.
Have we not seen a Morgan Freeman movie?
Well, I don't believe we have, Randy. I believe if we need to. Yeah, what should it be, though? Deep Impact?
It should be Hard Rain.
Yeah.
Hard Rain would be perfect. Randy Quaid.
Well, Deep Impact's on the list. He needs president.
Deep Impact is on our list. Yeah.
And what else could we do with him?
I'm looking up Morgan Freeman right now. He's also currently streaming The Code.
I wish I could say that was the last time I saw Andy Dufresne.
The President's Photographer, All About Us is streaming. Driving Miss Daisy
is such a good movie.
Oh man, could we do Driving Miss Daisy?
No, I don't think
so.
It's such a good movie, Brian. Right.
I bought that on DVD the day DVD players became available.
Fantastic movie.
Like really? Kind of weirdo. Yeah. I bought that in Fifth Element.
You got a DVD player and then you purchased Driving Miss Daisy
for like $30. So I got Driving Miss Daisy, Fifth Element, and The Rock. Those are my three movies.
That's funny.
I got me some action films. What else can I get?
If you had been like 70 years old at the time, you'd now be 93.
True.
But that
I appreciate movies like that. I always have, even as a kid. I loved him. I loved On Golden Pond in 81 or whatever.
Oh, man.
And I shouldn't. I was a young kid. I shouldn't like those sorts of things, but I did.
Did you guys ever see Black Rain with Kirk Douglas? Michael Douglas.
No. Sorry. Black Rain?
Yeah. 1989.
Did Morgan Freeman yell, "We just want the money"? Did that happen?
I don't know because this is – I looked up Hard Rain while he was looking at Morgan Freeman. Just Rain came back. Purple Rain, Black Rain.
I wish I hadn't seen Purple Rain.
I want to go see Hard Rain right now.
Okay.
I want to watch that movie right now. It's not streaming.
I remember jet skis, Christian Slater, and Morgan Freeman. That's all I remember.
fantastic movie.
All right, let's see. Moving on to Never Live on a Road That Sounds Like This. Seriously, what are you doing? Why are you moving there? That's terrible. That's horrible.
Like moving to Funny Farm. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Chevy Chase.
Barely.
Right.
Sort of. Let's see. There's any people buried up there?
Has anyone ever buried a person up there?
Christ on his throne, no.
Christ on his throne, no.
Christ on his throne, I love that. He's so good at that. He throws his beer bottles. Well,
total thumbs around, and I'm like, oh, geez, project much? Of course somebody's buried.
That's the spot where I've never seen this movie before, but I did read the book.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my gosh, it's going to be his dead wife.
Yeah, and because that is in the book, right? Maybe that was
the book, well. The book gives you an idea that it might be.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But I thought this movie was going to go all the way with it, and gonna say that he had in the back room a zombie wife laying on a bed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Really, I'm not sure they didn't just cut all that out and this got left in because that reaction was very guilty. You know.
Yeah.
He didn't just fumble stuff around because he was just being old.
Right, right.
It's because he said that.
He about shat his pants.
Right.
Oh, he's knocking down beer bottles. Like, that's a beautiful scene.
Oh, that cat's a pain.
How the hell did you get in here?
Ugh, dude.
How the hell did you get in here?
Now, don't think he was doing some serious acting there. He had the same face on he always did. He just yelled. Right. So take that for what it's worth. So I kept this.
How the hell did you get in here?
I'll just use that one.
There's a reason that actor never went on to do anything great and win awards.
No. He's fine for little parts on TV now, but that's about it. Here's your Stephen King cameo.
And now, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and comfort you and lift you up and give you peace.
May the Lord fix my deviated septum that I've always had.
Look out for that van. So if you're in a town and Stephen King is the minister, move.
Yeah.
Move.
Yeah.
Not good.
Mullet wearing, giant glasses having, just freaky
man,
looking.
He's still rocking those 70s glasses even today, man.
Well, here's the thing, though. The minute I hear him talking, I have a flashback of the third Dark Tower book, the one with mostly on the train, or no, the Wastelands, that one.
Yeah, Wastelands.
Wastelands. I'm listening to that audiobook, and before they had it redone, it's him reading it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rough go, dude. A whole 9 hours of him talking. It's rough.
He had a real thing for Frank Muller,
yeah,
the performer with the really, really droll voice.
Yeah,
right.
And I don't particularly like Frank Muller, but Muller was in this awful motorcycle accident, and it took pretty much robbed him of the ability to speak.
Yeah.
And Stephen King, Stephen King was like, if Mueller can't do my books, no one can. I'll do them. Dude, no.
Little did he know a freaking George Goodell would do everyone under the table. I mean.
Yes. And that's the thing. Like, I don't understand why Stephen King ever once thought that he needed to do an audiobook when there are such great actors out there. You just need to find another one.
Yeah. I just want George Goodell to go do all the ones that didn't get done by him. I mean, I would pay for that. Right. I would rebuy those books if he'd go back and do 2 and 3, which I don't think he's done.
Listen again, Wolves of the Cala by George Goodell. Listen to that. It's amazing.
It's so good. But the one right before that, the one I love so much,
Wizard and Glass,
is read by the Mueller guy, right?
By Frank Mueller.
And it's okay. But it is not George Goodell. Jeez.
But Wizard and Glass is where I have to put my foot down and say, read this book. Go get the paper book.
I agree.
And read this thing.
Yeah.
I don't usually do that. I love audiobooks.
Also, the Marvel adaptation of that period in the story's timeline, which is all set during that stuff, is real good. Real, real good. J. Lee White, that's an actor. J. Lee. It's just J. Lee. Anyway, the artist who does the work on that comic book is amazing, and it's really well done. Written by King, and it's fantastic. All right, moving on to blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure what this girl says. So once again, she's spouting some off, and I want to see if we can guess here. So here you go.
Got away from him, that numb shit.
Numb, numb shit.
Numb shit. Correct.
Not dumb shit.
It got away from you, you numb shit.
Is it numb?
Got away from him, that numb shit.
Okay, straight. Did she just screw up, or is that a way of saying?
No. I think she was told to say dumb shit.
That's what I think.
I think that's a Stephen King word.
Really? Numb shit
before. That's a word I've heard before. I knew exactly what she was talking about when she said it.
All right. I heard it and went, oh, you got it wrong, and they left it in. Get the baby.
Get the baby!
So there's your. So we're leading up to it.
It's not that you didn't capture the no.
Oh, it's coming. So she says, "Get the baby."
It's coming. Yay!
Jim Jam Flimmy Flam husband idiot boy trips, doesn't get the kid in time, and then we get one of these.
No!
And not just one. There were like a bunch of them.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't record all of them, but I did get that one. So
love it.
And that is so tropey. Holy crap! Here's how tropey it is, dude. Hold on. There you go. Let's see. F off, hairball.
Exactly what happens when you tell it to.
You want to hear a funnier version of that? Here.
F off, hairball.
Here you go.
Nice.
Here's how you know how men are when they're alone. So we can talk about this in a little bit deeper, right. But this is a line that I could not help but capture.
Probably went out for a hamburger or a chicken dinner, dear. You know how men are when they're alone.
What is she talking about?
Her husband has her food.
Since watching this movie, that instant, I have been sitting here going, what?
Yeah. I don't get
probably,
it.
When I'm alone, I go out for a chicken dinner.
Yeah. You know, right. He's probably just getting a it's like saying to me, what's it like? It's like.
But
she's probably I can understand if somebody says, where's your wife? Oh, I don't know where she is. Well, you know how they are. She's probably either getting her nails done or her hair done. You know how women are. That's a oversimplification I can live with because it makes freaking sense. But a burger or a chicken dinner? Right.
You know how men are. He's probably at the hardware store or maybe he's at the sports bar.
Right.
Like, I thought this was actually really – when she said it, it made me laugh out loud. Sure. But I immediately thought, I was like, okay – all right, so we're getting this from her perspective. All right, let's look at her husband. Okay, is he the kind of guy that would go get a hamburger and a chicken dinner?
He's a rural doctor.
No, talking about the mom's husband.
I see where you're going with it, but
yeah, and I'm like, okay, and I looked at him, I'm like, yeah, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, but a chicken dinner. It's so random.
It's not random. It's actually very specific. A chicken dinner. Not just chicken.
If a guy could go out on the weekend and lick a hobo's armpit. You know how men can be. What is that? I don't even understand it. It's the dumbest thing.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
All right. Well, here is my favorite pratfall moment of the thing. He falls out of the night before he got done digging his kid out of the ground. And now he has a complete pratfall in his bed and hits his head on the side of the thing.
That was hilarious.
And it sounds great. You don't even have the visual, and it sounds great. Here it is.
Dude, it sounds like it's right out of an episode of Seinfeld.
I agree. Dude,
loved it. Man, there was a few times that I laughed in this movie just out loud, and that was one of them. Because I had actually looked away for a second to explain something to my 11-year-old. And I just catch out of my corner of my eye and I hear that audio and it's like, what the?
Yeah.
Sort of reminded
me. Oh. It was great. And then finally, here's a bit of the creepy laugh from the kid while he's in dead phase. Ooh.
Ooh.
All right. All right. That is it for your clips. And that means that we must do the following thing, which is awards. And here's your theme music for it. These are the awards that we are going to give this film from the Academy of Film Sack Awards nominees, and they are this. Can't find it. Hold on. Here we go. Best Use of the Ramones in Your Movie Award. Just have a guy singing it there in his car. That's great. Terrible Child Acting Award goes to the twin girls who play the daughter. Great Child Acting Award goes to Gage, the kite-flying kid. The Things Would Be a Lot Simpler If We Had Cell Phones in This World Once Again Award we give to this movie.
Oh, it's so pervasive now.
Yeah, it's bad.
Like, if you just go back a little ways, every film, I just like throw films out there, Big Trouble in Little China or Revenge of the Nerds, every movie is so radically different with iPhones.
Yeah, that's true. Trek Connections, Denise Crosby, duh.
Yeah.
She played Lieutenant Tasha Yar in Next Generation. Also, we had the dude with the head mash, and I didn't copy this in for some reason. But anyway, he was on a bunch of Voyager stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he did some other things as well. And there are others, but for some reason this didn't paste in. Anyway, thank you for that, Daryl. Soundtrack great. I'd give it H for Holds Up. I thought it was fine. Creepy. Weird.
It was good.
Yeah. None of it was synthy or stupid. Or you know, you wouldn't.
Oh, it
look
was
at
stupid,
it.
But it was good.
Yeah, but it was good. I guess it holds up. It's not a thing that the whole time I was going, man, you can sure tell this soundtrack was from the 80s.
Right.
It was
right.
More like, oh, this is probably about what they'd use today. So that was great. Let's sum this thing up in a Twitter post. What say you? Let's start with Randy. 140 characters less. What do you got?
Pet Sematary, a movie that proves that in some respects, films can be better than books. And those respects are gross. I'm Stephen King, and I approve this tweet.
I'd vote for you. For your Stephen King. Brian.
Pet Sematary, making me jump at stupid cats for over 20 years. Stupid cats!
Oh,
demonically possessed kids at stupid cats.
Yeah.
But wait! There's lobster!
Ooh, there is lobster. That sign was there for no reason.
And I was like, is nothing going right. Nothing's going right. Dang it, dang it, dang it. Ooh, yeah. Lobster!
Lobster, yummy. And then Brian Ibbett. Oh, I forgot. Eyes, the light, the heat. I forgot. It's still in his eyes. let me read you an email. How about that? Oh, no, I mean, before I do that, here's what I learned while you saw and did terrible things and kept that expressionless face the whole damn time. This movie is about how not to watch your kids in places you should be watching them better.
Mm.
Number two, he woke up with poo feet.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Mud feet, I guess.
That was like the worst fear of mine ever. It's like,
that was a real dream. My mud on my feet. When I'm initially not sure if I'm totally frozen. Oh, wait. Sorry. When I'm initially not sure if a totally frozen cat is actually dead, I'll make sure and check its pulse anyway.
Right.
number four. Remember when you could pick people up at the airport on the tarmac? I do.
Oh, dude. Oh, you still can in some places.
Can you? As it'd be small markets, right?
Yeah, like, very, very small airports.
Yeah. And then finally, would there be anything grosser than a head wound victim spitting blood in your face?
Right.
Ugh.
Nice.
So, yes, and we've spent the entire episode of Film Sack not talking about the final scene in the film.
The man and wife thing or the...
Yes, okay. Which is iconic. It is
Grody
very well done. If it weren't a horror movie, I would even call it tasteful because there is something really pleasant about this as a summary of everything, as a final... almost exclamation point on the film.
I call it the dead alive moment.
It's a
me
trope.
Of Peter Jackson movie. Just
it's,
gross.
It's a huge trope, but the way it's portrayed, you're able to fill in all the blanks. Oh, so this is what he did and exactly how and what is going on here. And they even go so far as to not show you the action. Real... twist, if
degree,
you will,
right? Death twist.
Leave you to imagine it for yourself,
which I liked. Right. What I didn't like is him making out with a chick with half her face blown off and her eye leaking some sort of pus.
That was awesome. Not leaking, squirting
out of her eye.
That's a cranial fluid.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer.
It was not beautiful.
I prefer never to see that again, as long as I live. But good job, Tasha Yar. It's the best you've ever looked. All right, moving on.
It leads me to a question that I have for the both of you.
Okay.
Do people, because by this point, this is out of character for him.
Yeah.
The burying of her and so forth.
Sure.
And at this point, you have to look back on his decisions and go, wow, you made a lot of stupid choices.
You made bad choices, starting with the cat.
Do you have to have stupid characters for horror movies to get to the end?
Oh.
It helps.
yeah, I think that helps people suspend their disbelief. Because now they're like, clearly this guy's driven by these two, three emotions, and that's it. He doesn't have any other rationale. And that makes it more believable, I think.
So you're just saying that people, you have to have, like, in horror movies, it's a horror movie, we accept we're going to watch this thing. We're going to watch stupid people.
Right. And you know, I've had this discussion many times, and I agree. They are stupid people because we have all the information. as the viewer. And as someone who doesn't have all information, we often are do not believe things that are supernatural. And I can't say that if I was in a situation where something supernatural is happening, that I would believe it. That I might would go, okay, well, maybe this, well, maybe that. Or if I suddenly had some kind of weird superpower, like I could bury people and they'd come back to life. I can't say that I wouldn't misuse that or abuse it. I like to think I'd be smarter than this guy, but I'm just saying, usually the things in horror movies are outside your abilities to conceive because we've never been put in that situation. And as a result, I can't necessarily say that how I would react. But there's definitely, since being the viewer, we have all the information. That's what makes it scary, and that's what makes it suspenseful, because we're watching this idiot do the dumb thing. And
A part of you being smarter than the guy on the screen just the fact that you are seeing, you're the camera, you're seeing what they're not seeing. You're
absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely. I mean, because plus you're removed from the emotion of what this character is going through. Because in absolute fear, we make some bad decisions.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's human beings for you, I suppose.
Brian Dunaway, in that regard, how do you feel about movies like Scream?
I would probably be dead. Also, almost any scary movie, I'd probably be dead, because I'm so stupid when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to believe it. I'm not going to believe anything supernatural is happening. I'm going to be the guy that's going to come out backyard and go, you guys stop messing around. Back here.
Scream's hard, though, because it's more parody than – I mean, it's scary parody, but it's not like scary movie parody. But, I mean, it's
– right.
They're clearly just homaging all over themselves.
I have never heard that term. I love it.
Write that down. They're homaging all over themselves.
They are. That's they're awesome. Like, oh, look at how self-referential we are to the stuff that even that director used to do.
That's my favorite thing you've said in ages.
So
I know it.
So for me, that's those movies are hard to compare. But I don't know. I think you got to have. You just have to create your world. You know, I can't imagine. I don't know. It's like Star Wars. You have to expect. You have to accept a certain set of rules about space, planets, and the current state of things.
So let me turn this question around for Scott. Can you imagine a great horror film where the characters are really smart and do really smart things and make the right decisions all the time? Could it be scary?
Yes. Yeah.
We've seen a few. I mean, Aliens. I mean, even – or Alien. Oh, my God. Almost said Aliens.
Alien.
You know, she's pretty smart.
A lot of bad decisions in that film.
There are some bad decisions.
Well, but by her, or is she like kind of stuck with the decisions other
people
made?
She didn't make any bad decisions, but you're right. She's at the mercy of a bunch of other idiots and a couple of people who are kind of undermining her, including one robot who looks a lot like Frodo. And then that all goes down, and then she's left with whatever she's got left, which is her own body, and she's the only one left in her underwear, and everyone else is dead. And she's got to get out of there, and that's it. That's all she's got. So I don't think that's as good as a comparison. And I'm trying to think of an example of this, and I can't. I think Randy's onto something. I don't think this exists yet or exists very well.
It was really driven home for me by this film because, like I say, if you look back at just this episode of Film Sack.
It's a new show, Film Cat.
If you just look back at this episode of Film Sack, what we've been talking about, where we've gone, oh, that was stupid, it's always been ridiculous decisions that people don't actually make. And I can't help feeling like someone should make a movie about the opposite. Smart people making great decisions, and it's still scary.
You say this, but I feel like I wouldn't say his decisions were bad. I would say his decisions were desperate. And I think that's probably a big difference because if the cat died, he kind of got pulled along and he didn't know what was going on. And that was kind of some stupid decision making. But when his kid died and he's like, okay, I can either live without my kid or I can try to bury him and see what happens. And his rationale was, well, if it goes bad, I'll just terminate him. Now, his biggest folly was going home and falling asleep like a dummy. He should have stayed there and seen what happened. But by the point that he went to bury his wife, he was mad. He was insane.
You never know by looking at him, but sure.
Right.
He looked the same as he did in the day they drove up to that house. But
while I agree with Randy's, assertion that you have to, you know, you got to have that stupidity a lot in your horror movies. It certainly helps. I don't necessarily know if there was stupid decisions in this movie as much as desperate decisions.
Yeah,
but whether you call them stupid or desperate, they weren't informed. They weren't smart. Right. They weren't intelligent.
No, no,
right?
Absolutely not.
The best horror movies are filled with people who make bad decisions for selfish reasons.
Right.
Yes.
So you if you got a survival zombie movie and you got five survivors that have happened upon each other, one of those guys is going to backstab you in a heartbeat if he gets.
It's going to get us all killed,
and he will because he's selfish. He sees some money he wants, or he thinks he's got a way to escape, but only he can get out of there, or whatever the thing is. Right. And I think that's I don't think see this is what I'm getting at is I don't I would love to see somebody try and still have it be effective, but I don't think you have a good horror movie without that. I think you got to have people making real bad decisions.
Right. And I think the same thing applies for comedies. Usually a comedy is based on people making poor decisions or people around them making poor decisions and then trying to maintain that lie or maintain that situation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, comedy is just the straight definition of comedy is the unexpected. You don't expect something that makes you laugh. And
oh my God, this is why I love horror comedies.
Right. And I love horror comedies too. And horror comedies tell you up front, this dumbass is about to do something particularly dumb, find themselves in a particularly stupid situation. And I'm just wondering if someone smart, like Quentin Tarantino, ever made a really serious horror film, if he could also have smart characters. And I don't know. I don't know.
I'm almost betting there's probably a movie out there we're not thinking of that somebody's going to send in because there's been a lot of movies where people are just overrun by bad things. Not necessarily a bad decision. It's just bad things happen.
Speaking of people sending us emails.
Oh, let's read a couple. Here's one from Skip C. Brewer. No, I'm sorry. Skip C. from Brewer, Maine.
Skip C.
Ooh, Maine. That's cool.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I had to weigh in on the best acting rapper.
Yeah,
I would have to nominate Tone Loc, only for Surf Ninjas from 1930.
Oh, I was hoping we were going to hear Ace Ventura.
1993. I think that just by making that flick, the filmmakers sacked themselves more thoroughly than you guys ever could. Keep up the good work, Skip C. Brewer or Skip C. from Brewer. Sorry, I got another email from Eric Johnson. Yavor. Who says,
once again, Avia Musicom, wonderful.
Of course. Hey, Film Sackers, I was listening to the one about Empire of the Ants and wanted to point out that the book 1984 was written by George Orwell, H.G. Wells. We knew this when we got done.
Yeah, we corrected this about halfway through.
By the time we were over, like, oh, shoot, we got those two guys mixed up.
It was my fault.
Quite a bit. Anyway, on a more positive note, because that was a super negative one, if you're looking for another giant ant movie, I would recommend the 1954 film Them with an exclamation point, which features giant ants and stars James Whitmore, who would eventually go on to play Brooks in The Shawshank Redemption, Fred Gwynn, Santa from the original Miracle on 34th Street, and Gunsmoke's James Arness. The movie itself is very similar in style and structure to The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, which we've seen. Mm-hmm. With scientists discovering giant ants mutated by radiation and a big showdown in the city. It also holds a 7.3 rating on IMDb compared to Empire of the Ants 3.4. So even if not for Film Sack, it's still a good flick. If that's streaming, I'm all down with this. This sounds awesome. I kind of remember this something. I didn't know Fred Gwynn. Wait, Fred Gwynn wasn't the original. Who am I thinking of? Who's the guy in a movie we just talked about? That's Fred Gwynn.
Yes, who was just watching? Yeah.
Well, is he the Santa from the original 34th Street movie? Miracle on 34th? That doesn't seem right.
That's not right.
There may be a different Fred spelled different.
That's right.
That could be. Oh, this is spelled G-W-E-E-N, or at least that's what the email says. We'll have to look into it. But
sometimes Santa is better.
I'm all in for... I'm the real Santa Claus. Now just hold still, little boy. If you want us to see movies like this and you have cool recommendations, let us know. If they're streaming or not, we're always interested in looking at stuff. And who knows, they might be on the show, especially if they're streaming. That's almost a guarantee.
Now, Scott, you open ourselves up. We're not always interested in looking at stuff.
No, I always like looking at stuff. Are you kidding me? Give me
something
to look at.
We do get a lot of really awful suggestions, and we appreciate them.
Oh, of course we do. Of course we do.
It's just there's so many bad movies out there.
They're not all going to make the cut.
Speaking of bad movies, So this week we did Pet Sematary because we realized that it was expiring immediately.
Yeah, we wanted to give and, you guys a better chance of seeing
hope,
it.
Hope you got to see it.
Yeah.
So that means that next week we're gonna be watching Rocky V.
That's right. And yeah. Guess what? I guess who will be back for the Rocky V viewing? That's right.
That would be the Bruiser Brian Abbott.
Bruiser Brian Abbott.
Miss him.
He'll be here.
After that, back to our October of Horror, we've got The Prophecy 2.
Musgrote.
And then Child's Play.
Musgrote.
And that also.
Musgrote.
Oh, okay. So Child's Play. Oh, dude. So lots of Halloweenish happening there with our next couple of episodes.
I know. I have never seen The Prophecy 2 or Child's Play.
I've seen The Child's Play, never Prophecy 2. So.
I have seen The Child's Play, but never The Prophecy 2.
I've never seen The Prophecy 1. I don't even know what that is.
I really wish we could have got some Phantasm in there, man.
Just get a little Phantasm in there.
Right.
Just squeeze a little in if we can.
How much horror do you need in your October?
All of it. All of it.
Well, it is Halloween, and we'll be here with some fresh horror movies for Film Sack time. Again, Brian will join us next week for Rocky IV. So stay
Rocky
tuned
five.
For the five. I keep saying four. Five.
Rocky V and The Prophecy 2.
And The Prophecy 2
and
after
then Child's
that.
Play.
And then Child's clear. Play, unless something's weird, and then we'll change it, and then we'll let you know last minute like we do sometimes. But Rocky 5 is definitely set for next week, so unless something crazy happens, that should be the case. And one more Stallone, everybody. Just one more Stallone movie.
Stallone.
Visit us on the web. We're at filmsack.com. Follow Randy's advice and do follow us on Twitter. It's at filmsack. It's really a great way to kind of keep up what's going on, find out when things are leaving streaming, and a little side thing here and there about some movie we like or whatever. Lots of good stuff happening on that Twitter feed, at filmsack. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. And leave us DOS review on iTunes. We'd appreciate that as well. A quick note, if you, I know a few of you out there listening have been waiting for the new Comic Dorks podcast with myself, Scott Kurtz, Steven Schleicher, Comic Dicks, is that what I said?
I don't know what you almost said.
Mark Spagnuolo, brand new show all about comics. First episode up the same day as this one. You can find more details at comicdorks.com.
I'm excited.
It was way fun. Yeah, it was a really good time. And if you want to hear some, you know, some gritty controversy about the comic book world. Oh, boy. Did we have some fun on that first episode. So check that out. Other great shows just like this found at frogpants.com, including that one and this one. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, for Peter Gabriel, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
F*** off, hairball. Hi, Daddy. I love you. Hi, Daddy. I love you. You've done it, you stupid old man. Now you've got to undo it. Sometimes dead is better. Get the baby. F*** off, hairball.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.